VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here, as always, live in the studio on this Florida-Georgia weekend, where you've put in your life in your hands by driving on Butler or I-95. Everybody out there listening, please just take it a little easy. A lot of people from out of town in here, they don't know their way like you do. Man, it's nuts out there.
Yeah, it's going to be crowded downtown there. Saying on the news to get there by 10:30 if you want to find a parking spot. Mm-hmm.
A little tolerance of the out-of-towners helps and goes a long ways, because they came here to, A, have a good time, and, two, to spend lots of money. And we need them. We like it. So take it a little easy. Anyway, welcome back to all the regulars. We appreciate you always being here. Why we show up every week. And if you're new to the show, either because you're out of town, maybe you got your radio set and you're driving around down to the stadium, try to stick around for as long as you can. Hopefully we'll talk about some things that interest you. Adam and I, as always, will have a show full of very interesting and up-to-date news and so on, things that are germane to what's in the market and topics of interest to us. But you can change the whole program if you want to, by simply picking up the phone and dialing 904-222-8255, or easy to remember version 222-TALK. And callers will always go immediately to the front of the line, which is one reason that waits are never very long for callers on this show, because when they come in, we take them instead of stacking them up. And that makes you not have to spend a whole bunch of time to get your question answered. Don't ever be afraid to ask what you think is a simple question. I promise you, if you don't know the answer, there are many, many people out there who also don't know. We can only all learn together. In fact, we can learn from you if you ask the right questions or give us some insight that we wouldn't normally think of. So remember, it's an interactive show, and you will be heard should you pick up the phone and call. So this week's topics, one unpleasant one, that's the market, and then some that are considerably better than that. What's going to happen? We know that we had another bad week in the market, but we also know that there's no reason for it. What happened is explainable only by that old saying that sometimes all news is good news, sometimes all news is bad news, and other times all news is just news. This week seemed to be mostly on the bad news. And statistically, I'll tell you, over time, the month following a bad October is generally not real good, not real bad. It's generally just a little negative, after which time everything tells us that it will take off and we'll go through a period of time that's really extraordinary. Can't say that it'll happen, but I'm telling you what's happened over time. And our trivia question, which we'll give you after the first break, reflects some of that, if not all of it. So anyway, I'm going to let Adam take the ugly part this week. There was good news, though. We had a Thursday. Oh, there, I gave all the good news. You can talk about the rest.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't real pretty. It was markets all fell more than 3%. The month of October has been downright ugly for U.S. equities, with indexes down more than 10% in a lot of cases. Year-to-date, most major indexes are still in the black, but not all of them, and not by much. So if you're in small and mid caps, you're probably negative this year. If you stuck with large caps, there's a chance you're still positive. NASDAQ is still positive for the year, but it's just not been real pretty. A lot of things are happening right now that are being blamed for this drop, but I'm not sure any of them are accurate. The most prevalent one that we think might have something to do with it is politics. The market's worried about the midterm elections. Uncertainty around the results. Nobody really knows which way these are going to go. And we've had 2 years of Republican control outcomes have been pretty predictable. So now we don't know what's going to happen. Should the House go to the Democrats? There could be talk of an impeachment vote, which wouldn't go anywhere, but it just upsets the apple cart, and the market hates uncertainty. So that's one thing that we think is adding to it.
And the trade talks.
Yeah, the trade talks, the rate hikes, the potential cracks in the housing market. Angela and Howard talked about something earlier that I think is very, very relevant to the discussion right now. You're seeing a lot of talk, is the housing market about to bust again? My answer is no, it's not. A 4.5% 30-year note is still a really good rate on your mortgage. And while it might take some time to adjust to, because we've been used to 3.5% mortgages, it's not the end of the world. So will there be some adjustment in the prices? Possibly. But is that, after you've had run-ups of 7-8% a year for 5 years, is that really a bad thing? No, it's just like the stock market. Every once in a while, you're going to see a little pullback, and then it'll charge forward again, in my opinion. Now, there are some markets that are soft. Big cities, luxury developments have been overdone. So the 10 million plus market in New York, absolutely slow right now because there's just too much inventory.
Maybe I'll pick up a bargain at only $9.5 million.
Exactly. Or the $50 million place that Angela and Howard were talking about.
Yeah. Well, I have been looking for a place to stuff my lotto winnings that up in South Carolina.
I need a place to stay, for that weekend. I go to New York every 10 years. Mm-hmm. So that might work.
Used to.
Yeah. But if you're looking for a $300,000 or below house in Jacksonville, you're probably going to be in a bidding war, most likely. I mean, that's a pretty desirable commodity right now. So the market's very specific for housing, and I don't think that we're in a bubble. So that's my 2 cents on that. And if it makes you feel any better, the U.S. wasn't the only market that got hit this week. It took the brunt of it, which was kind of the opposite of last week, but there were some ugly markets overseas as well. Ironically, Brazil and China were actually the two winners this week, two that have been off the most this year at certain points.
So let's spend a second on that.
Sure.
What's going on in Brazil?
Well, Brazil is electing who they're calling the Latin Trump.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Now, I say that with some certainty. The polls are showing a 59%.
He's got a pretty solid lead, yeah.
And his platform and Trump's are absolutely identical.
Except one's in Portuguese.
Yes. They have been so far left for so long and so corrupt for so long. The woman who ran it for a while, a lady named Rousseff, was the oil minister for a long time, and she was corrupt then. So then she got up to the head of the whole thing, and she was corrupt then, and she got kicked out. And I think Brazilians are just largely fed up with their government. This guy came in with the populist tone that Trump came in with, and it looks to me like they're jumping on the bandwagon. So that explains that to me. Now China.
Yeah, China, they were down 26% year to date or so. So they got a point and a half bounce. I don't know. Maybe there's some optimism.
What do we always say about the market?
It's forward looking. So
6 to 9 months.
Right.
I think what we saw today was a market pricing in a bottom based on expectations of those trade and tariff talks going forward right after our election. I don't think they want to do it, because I don't think they want to allow Trump to come across the international airwaves as the winner right before the election. So maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but I think they're pricing in a settlement with China, and I think that's ultimately very good for all foreign markets.
I'm still expecting the tweet the week before the election, things look good with China or something like that.
Well, so it doesn't have to be settled to be tweeted. Okay, we're going to talk about a lot more things as soon as we get back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And again, our lines are open. 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. We have a trivia question this week, sponsored as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. We've had a tough time in the market here just lately, but I went back a little while and took a look, and I had my eyes opened, as I always like to do for these. So question today is, how much has the Dow risen in percentage in the past 2 years exactly, meaning from the close of business last night 2 years back to the nearest percent plus or minus? How much has it risen? Yeah, I took negative out of there. So you already got a range. It's from zero to infinity.
Yeah. Well,
easy, huh?
Yeah. I mean, year to date, the Dow is pretty much flat. So they don't.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It's. I mean, it's off.
That makes it an even better question.
0.1%.
Yeah. So. How about that? See, sometimes I amaze myself.
It's truly amazing.
I know. Anyway, a few other little comments on the market. Next week is Jobs Week. That is very likely to look very, very good. Assuming, and this is a strange assumption to have to make, but assuming that employers can find employees, the jobs number should look really good. Otherwise, what you're going to see is a good job openings number, or both.
Yep, that's true. And that has been the challenge recently, much like in the housing market where the month supply was so low, there just wasn't any inventory to buy. And people were pointing to that as a bad number, but that's not a bad number. That means demand is through the roof and there isn't enough supply to go around.
That's
so
right.
That's why the prices have been going up.
And we've had devastating storms a couple of times just recently, too, that has kiboshed some economic activity.
Yep.
Despite that, we have come, of course, a lot of that came after this number. But the 3.5% GDP number was very solid. And as areas like the Panhandle and the Carolinas are making their comeback, you're going to see a flurry of activity over there, which is all going to add on to the GDP. So I think we're going to close out the year with a very, very solid performance in GDP.
Yeah.
And that helps the market.
Yeah, and we're well into earnings season as well, and it seems like we have a little bit of a problem here with top-line growth. The earnings beat rate stands at 67.2, which is strong, in line with previous quarters. But the revenue rate had dropped to 56%, well below about the 70% rate we have seen for the last few quarters. And whether that's expectations have gotten out of control or companies are slipping a little bit in their top-line growth rate, both are possibilities. It's probably a combination somewhere in between. It's a little bit lower as it stands so far. So that's something to keep an eye on. And that's the problem that we had had throughout the recovery. So earnings were growing like crazy and revenues were just not growing for the longest time. So hopefully we're not going back to that, because that would not be a great sign.
Now we need more consumers yet, which are made from people with jobs. And as you know, there are 7 million job openings in this country, not enough people to fill them. The more people that we can get working, a lot of people have been out of the labor market so long, they really don't have much clue about how to get back in, when truly it's pretty easy nowadays.
Yeah. I mean, as far as if there's been a time in my lifetime that it's been easier to find a job, I'm not talking about your dream job, but a job, I don't remember when it was, because there are jobs are plentiful right now.
I saw Rachel Campos Duffy this morning, and she was talking about having just been back to Wisconsin, which of course rings kind of homey with us, having been born and raised up there. And she was talking about all the manufacturing that's going on. And it's like the old days when you'd walk up and down the streets of the where the factories are and so on, and everyone has a help wanted sign on it. Mm-hmm. And all you have to do is walk in, and they're going to figure out something you can do if you're serious about getting a job. It's that good up there.
That's good to hear. And the other good news out of earnings season is that more companies are raising guidance than lowering.
Mm-hmm.
The number's slightly lower than it has been in the past few quarters, but it's still positive. So that means that companies are still optimistic about the coming quarters, which is, that is great news.
Yeah, I want, you know how I rail about they, you know, the they that's in quotation marks. Who are those guys? The economists, you know, the same ones that predicted 8 out of the last 3 recessions. The numbers they're putting out now are very difficult to match in expectations. So what you come up with is a lot of misses. The economic data for this week was 15 of which were negative, 7 positive. And if you look at the numbers column, the actual readings on all of this stuff, they're beautiful. But if you look at the expectation numbers, they're higher than those. And, you know, at what point do you say something's really good or just good? Or bad, missing expectations, those expectations are unrealistic, is not something I pay a great deal of attention to. Is the economy good? Yes, it is. It has been good for some time. It will be good for some time to come. Markets react to a lot of things in the short run. That's the noise, and we're in the noisy period right now. But markets long run are driven by economic conditions, and ours are excellent.
Yeah, that was one thing I wanted to talk about, too, is that you're hearing a lot of the talking heads say, have we reached peak earnings?
No.
Meaning that they can only go down from here. And I agree. It's absolutely...
Remember peak oil? That was in the 70s.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. No. The answer is they don't. We have no idea what's going to happen with earnings going forward. But if market conditions stay like they are, they should continue to improve. So I just don't see where they're coming up with this. This is not as good as it gets. And this is it. We're never going to get any better. Anyone who says that hasn't lived long enough.
Which kind of leads me into some headlines. I get tongue-tied and flabbergasted sometimes when I read news and headlines. Often those are different things, not always. So I got a couple dandies this week. On Tuesday, Chinese yuan, their currency, to replace U.S. dollar by end of 2018. Now, that means they have 2 months and 4 days to replace the U.S. dollar.
Let's see.
The Bretton Woods Conference took place how many decades ago where we declared the U.S. dollar the reserve currency? I didn't hear of another Bretton Woods being called for November. Did you?
No.
And who sponsored this rather unusual headline? Hartford, fill in the blank, group. What do you suppose that word might be?
Well,
it's four letters long.
Oh.
Starts with G. Gold.
Oh, I was
what happens,
thinking annuities, but okay.
What happens if the dollar gets replaced by another currency? Demand for dollars falls. What happens when demand for anything falls? Price goes down. How is gold purchased? It is purchased in dollars. That means if the dollar goes down, the price of gold is going to react. It's going to take more and more dollars to buy it. They're selling gold. Oh, who'd have thought, right? All right, here's another goodie. These five charts prove that the stock market is on the cusp of crashing by 70%, maybe more. That was Thursday. So, on the cusp? Now, how big a cusp do you suppose it is? I don't know. 70% or more? Really? Let's see. Remember 06, 7, and 8, everybody? 7, 8, and 9, actually.
Yeah, 7,
say.
8, 9.
The S&P lost about 55% total. So this is going to be bigger than that. When that was only matched once in history by the crash of 29. Really? And by the way, those charts prove, it says right there, prove. So I've read it all, and I didn't see any proof of anything. Ignore that stuff. This one is a website called Money and Markets, which is an aggregator website. They bring in stories from all over, so I can't say that they're responsible for it. They did bring it in and post it. And then Friday, media on alert, recession worse than the Great Depression coming in 2020. Now that is irresponsible journalism, people. What set up the crash of 29, the things that set up the crash of 7, 8, and 9, they do not exist today, and you could invent a scenario, but it is completely irresponsible to publish anything like this. Also Friday, we think the major economies are on the cusp of this turning into the worst recession we've seen in 10 years. Now, think about this. What's wrong with that story? And by the way, I'm going to tell you, your mother got it instantly. She nailed this one.
Okay.
We haven't had one in 10 years. So we're going to enter the worst recession in 10 years. It would also be the only one.
Well, then by definition, that is correct.
I loved it. The next recession could put the 2008 financial crash to shame. Could being the operative word. Two-thirds of business economists in the U.S. expect a recession to begin by the end of 2020. A forecast of weather is not good after 3 days. a forecast of economic thinking is not good after about 20 minutes. So you'll read this stuff, you'll hear it, but you won't hear it here except as we sit here and make fun of it. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Things are fine. Look at the real numbers. Look at all the people you know that are working. Look at how your market's done, which reminds me that trivia question is still open. What's it done? What's the Dow done over 2 years? After the break, we'll go into some more things, good, bad, and indifferent. We just got a whole bunch of great stuff to talk about today. One of them is income planning and what that means to you, especially as you get a little older, and required minimum distribution reform, which is part of that. Trump is trying to reform the way we take RMDs. They have a great opportunity to get it right. I fear very much that they will take that opportunity but get it wrong. So we'll talk about that. All right, we'll see you right after the break. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
And again, our trivia question is open. What has the Dow Jones Industrial Average done percentage-wise over the past 2 years from right now? And it's, I'll tell you, it's not inconsequential.
Nope.
All right, we were talking about some various and sundry weird things that have been going on, people in general. I want to tell you, we're going to tell you some stories about some so-called investment advisors and what they've done to people and how you, there's no reason to tell a story that doesn't have a point, right?
Yeah.
So we have a point for each of these, how you cannot fall into this. Because if there's one thing that gets on my nerves more than anything else in the world, it is people who prey upon the elderly and their money.
Absolutely.
They are the lowest form of life, including used car salesmen and politicians. They're even lower than that. Adam's got a couple.
Yeah, we got a couple of advisors gone bad here. One is Edward Lee Moody. He defrauded 53 clients out of $6.1 million. And he promised to profitably invest their money in securities and on behalf of them and manage those accounts on an ongoing basis. All sounds fine and good. Unfortunately, he never even opened the accounts. And so he violated our rule number one, which is your financial advisor should use a platform that you've heard of that you can log on and see your money at any time.
This means the TD, Schwab,
yep,
Fidelity, Vanguard, all the big names.
Yep.
Where you don't go to the advisor's website to get there. You go to their website to get
there. And so a third-party custodian, and you can see your own money. That's just rule number one. If you don't have that, if you are writing a check to your advisor, run. Run away. So he used one
after you stop payment on it.
Yeah,
yeah.
He used $1.4 million of that stolen money to cover business expenses, purchase a home, make car loan payments, shop, and travel to Las Vegas and other destinations, and then another $885,000 went in his personal account for buying and selling securities for his personal benefit. He did, however, pay out $1.5 million to the original investors.
And where did he get that money?
From the new investors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the cure for his Ponzi scheme was to Ponzi it again. All right. I'll jump over for the second one. Melvin Leonard Wimmer. He's 53, and he targeted the elderly. He collected $3.6 million from them and lost about $3 million of it, which all came out of senior clients' retirement savings, of course. And what he forgot to tell them was that he was trading options and that they were risky. What have we told you about options? What have we told you about accounts that you can see online, etc.? This guy, let's see, what they gave him, 75 months in prison, 5 years of supervised release for securities fraud. And frankly, he got off easy.
Yeah, definitely. And third, but definitely not least, Don Bennett was convicted in a $20 million Ponzi scheme targeting the elderly. Now, this woman is just dumb. Because she actually could have been a very successful advisor from everything I'm reading here. She had raised $20 million in her business, which is a good amount from 46 investors. That's a really good start to a business right there. And she had a nationally syndicated radio show. She was she interviewed politicians and financiers, so she was well-connected. She was a regular guest on CNBC, and she contributed to Financial Advisor magazine. So all of those things are a pretty good recipe for success in our business. Mm. I mean, that's kind of a solid resume. But instead of doing what she was supposed to do, she used the new money to pay the older clients, typical Ponzi scheme. She also used some of the money to arrange for priests in India to perform religious ceremonies to ward off federal investigators and to purchase astrological gems. She also used the money for cosmetic surgery and to pay for her lavish lifestyle. So instead of doing what she said she was going to do, she basically spent it on herself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, the lessons are there. You do business with a registered investment advisor. Your money is always at a third-party custodian. 24/7, you can log on to their website, not that of your so-called advisor, and you can always see your money. That is step number one towards success as an investor, and it's the best insurance you've got against being defrauded by some of these people that we occasionally have to talk about.
I forgot the best part. This lady
tried
to obtain a $750,000 line of credit by making false statements to the bank.
She pledged her investment account against it, right?
Yeah, which was, according to her, worth $4 million. Mm-hmm. In reality, once the documents came available in court, her net portfolio value was $35.
And no sense?
Yeah.
You know, a laugh, but you really should be crying because those were real people's money that she took.
Absolutely.
And they believed
in her. Terrible for them.
You see them on TV and you read about them. Their pictures are on the Financial Advisor magazine. Everything's great, right?
Yeah.
Very credible people. But that's not good enough, people. I don't think anybody ought to do business with us just because we're on the radio, but you ought to come and see us just because of that. Because by the time you get there, you're going to understand the things we dislike and that all the things we tell you to do, we do. So if you want to sit down, give us a call at the office. And Adam will give you a rundown on that before the show's over and the various and sundry ways that you can get hold of us. But now I want to make very clear that I am not picking on the website Money and Markets today. As I said, they're an aggregator. I do not know where this one comes from, but this one is so egregious, I can't help but talk about it. Report. More than half of Americans collect more in welfare than they pay in taxes. Now, what is the possible outcome of that? First off, just think about it for a moment. Half collect more welfare than they pay in taxes? Does that seem right to you folks?
That doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it does not make a lot of sense. And here's why. A recent report by the Mises Institute, for those of you who don't know, von Mises was a very famous economist and one of the good ones, says more than half of Americans get more money in welfare through things like Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, and Social Security than they pay in taxes each year.
Wait a second.
Is Social Security welfare?
No, and neither is Medicare.
No. What do you have to do to collect Medicare and Social Security?
You have to be old.
And you have to have worked, and you have to have paid into the system. Not just a little bit, either. You have to have 10 or 40 quarters, which is basically 10 years of earnings covered in the system in order to even walk into the office and begin to discuss getting it. It is an entitlement. It is not welfare. And now everybody's going to sit back and say, that's not an entitlement. Let me define that for you. The word entitlement means just this, something to which you are entitled. It can be entitled by virtue of the fact that you paid your premiums. Therefore, you are entitled to the benefits. And that's all it means. Technically, Social Security and Medicare are entitlements. We don't normally say that because the politicians have ruined the word, as they have ruined so many other words, that they no longer mean what they are. They're not exactly transfer payments, government transfer payments either, in that they're not, in theory, they're not collected from one person and paid to another, but in actuality they are, because Social Security is a pay-as-you-go system. So Adam pays in every month, and I take it out every month. It transferred from him to me, but I take it out against my account. That's not the same thing as him giving me money or the government giving me money. His account is building. Even though they're using the money, his account is accumulating. So let's get this real clear. Medicare and Social Security are not welfare people. This is absolutely nuts. They break it down into brackets. And the brackets are reasonably meaningless, too, because they're not counting the right things. But they do very well demonstrate how the people who pay in the most don't get anywhere near all of it out from the government over time in any form. Well, that's not exactly news to anybody. We all know that a lot of people get more in government benefits than they put into it. That's why we have welfare systems. That's why we have safety nets for some people. But when you see things like this, it just reeks of bad politics and people trying to say something that is not exactly true by bending some rules and facts along the way. And when they do it, and when I see it, I promise you, I'm going to call them on it, because this is not good. We'll be back one more segment right after the break. Don't go anywhere on this beautiful day. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Lines are open, 904-222-8255. This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. How much is the Dow Jones Industrial Average up over the past 2 years to the day? That's a pretty nice number. A word out to the caller from last week. The JEA proposal will be covered by Adam in next week's show, just before the election. We'll give you a little description of what's actually on the ballot and his feeling, at least, about what we should do about it. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Mr. Van Wee. How are you?
I am excellent. How are you?
Doing just great.
Great. What's up?
I listened to the program last week with Marshall, and discussed. Yes, I listen every week.
Good.
But I listened about the reverse mortgage program, and he explained some of the changes, and he didn't, you know, really give an opinion. If, you know, at least I didn't take away an opinion of whether he's thinking that it's a good idea or a bad idea. I guess it's good for certain individuals.
Well, let me tell you a single fact that might answer your question.
Okay.
That's what he does for a living.
Okay.
So you have to think that you're right. Yes, it's a good idea, but you also qualified it perfectly, for which I thank you. For the right people done the right way, it is an excellent product.
And Marshall would agree with that. He's not one that would try and put you in one if you don't need one.
Yeah, we have some specialty friends in such things as reverse mortgages and annuities, and their goal in life is to make a living doing it the right way, by not doing it for most people, but then doing it the best it can be done for the right people.
And excellent.
That's how he... And if you ever need to get in touch with him, his last name is Gallup, and you can always go through our website and just email us if you can't find a direct link, and we're always happy to share those things with people.
All righty. Gallup, like in the Gallup poll.
G-A-L-L-O-P.
Yeah.
L-O-P. Okay.
With RMF.
Thank you so much.
Reverse Mortgage Funding is his company.
Right. RMF. And they're
RMF.
By the way, that's an excellent website. It'll take you to some knowledge pages where you can learn a lot more. There's so much more to the thing than what people learned early on, and they got turned off right away. And with good reason, because it was poorly done and poorly presented. But then they failed to learn how much better it's gotten and the ways that it can be put to good use. It's become an actual planning tool for people like us.
Excellent.
So, like I say, if you need it, anybody needs it, let us know.
Okay. One other thing, your buddy's talking about you on the radio again, your friend that comes on 2 hours after you guys.
Oh, geez. Oh, well.
Yeah,
what are you going to do?
Well, you know, he's listening, obviously, so that's a good thing.
Well, we welcome all listeners.
We do.
he's saying, you want to listen to those guys with their silly trivia questions? I could give you silly trivia questions. I'm here. I'm not here to waste your time.
Yeah, except for one thing. You won't even take a live phone call.
That's right.
What are you afraid of?
There. I mean, he's recording his program like Friday.
Yeah.
You know, in the morning.
Anybody, know? I mean, I challenge anybody with their pre-recorded shows to take a few live phone calls some week and just see how they hold up. And if you can't meet the challenge, too bad.
We always have a point to our trivia as well, which relates back to the program. So it is relevant, and it's kind of fun, too, I think. So.
And I've told you.
I enjoy it. I think it's great.
Good. I've told you many times how I get my trivia questions. I ask myself a question first that I can't answer, and then I go looking for the answer. And if I am at all surprised or interested by the answer, then it becomes the trivia question. But if it's boring and mundane, it doesn't happen. So there's always a point.
Speaking of which, Ron, do you want to take a shot at the trivia question?
I'm not very good at this kind of thing. I'll just say, in honor of Michael Jordan, I'll go with 23%.
Good guess. That's a really good guess, but it's surprisingly, it's low.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So you've narrowed it down. Now it's from 24 to infinity.
Okay. Well, it helped a little bit anyway. Thanks for the great call.
Oh, thank you for the great call.
Yeah,
I love it. Take care.
Patting myself on the back. Thank you, guys. Always a pleasure.
And always call. Good morning, Don.
Hey, Van Wick.
Yes, sir.
Can I speak to you for some minute?
Of course.
Adam.
Yes, sir.
Next week, when you discuss this thing about a JEA, I want you to do me a favor.
Okay.
I want you to find out who originally created this deal for selling the JEA. I have not been able to get an answer to that. They've all run and hide. But I want to know who was the first guy that wanted to sell that.
Okay.
Listen next week. You'll hear it all.
I'll be here, buddy.
All right. We appreciate it. You want to take a shot at the trivia?
I would miss it by 100 million miles. I pass on that.
Okay, no problem. Have a good one, Don.
Thanks for the call, and we'll do it next week. Absolutely. This JEA thing, for those of you who live in the Duval County, it's an interesting concept. Good morning, Miss Cheryl. I bet you want to take a shot at it, huh?
Yes.
What do you got?
50%.
That's too high.
Oh, darn it.
But you've now established a much tighter range for all the horseshoe players out there. You keep calling. Oh. Keep calling. You never know when you're going to get something on the nose. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, too. Bye-bye. All right. We've got a little better range.
Pretty good bracket.
Now.
Yeah. Yep. So, Colin, you have a few more minutes to get a call in if you want to.
Yep.
And in the meantime, I want to tell you a little bit about ourselves.
How to contact us.
Yeah. So we're located out at the beach. We're our fee-only fiduciary financial planners, and we are just off of Butler Boulevard near Marsh Landing Parkway. You can come and see us anytime. It's easy to get to from everywhere in the city. I know we're at the beach, but we're so convenient to Butler that you shouldn't let that hold you up. If you want to make an appointment with us, you can just call the office, 685-1505. Or go to our website, even easier, and click on the schedule a meeting button, and it will bring up our schedule. You can see what we have available and schedule right from there. And if you want to find out more about us before that, also go to our website. We have a bunch of blogs that we post weekly that will tell you a little bit about what we're thinking. Or if you miss a show, we hope you don't miss a show, but if you do, we put out a podcast, which is available on our website or on iTunes or SoundCloud.com. So find that out and download it to your phone and listen to us on your way to work.
Yeah, like that. All right. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 made some pretty major changes in the way we do our taxes. The two salient points for most people are that the actual tax rates, the marginal rates, are lower. And probably the most important thing of all was that the tax brackets were made wider. What does that mean? Well, it means you can make more money before you move into the next higher bracket. And this goes way out there. It used to hit 25% without even hardly being successful in a year. And now you're still at 24 when you've done three or four times that. Actual numbers will vary according to your status and so on. But there's a lot more opportunity now to do what we call income planning. Income planning isn't for everybody. If you're on a salary and you get paid every 2 weeks or whatever, there's not much income planning you can do right at the moment. You can do a little of it by how much you put away in pre-tax retirement funds, things like that. But that's not so much income planning as tax planning. Income planning is more often used by people, for instance, who are self-employed, where they can just delay some billing at the end of the year, or they can accelerate because they usually work on a cash basis for taxation purposes. Well, once you retire, a lot of people now, and we're directing a lot of this in our own day-to-day business, a lot of people are putting away different kinds of money. So there's the TSPs, the 401Ks, there's annuities qualified and otherwise, and there's regular traditional IRAs, and there's Roth IRAs. More and more people are winding up at the end of their working careers with some money in a Roth environment, meaning when it does come out, it comes out with no taxes at all. Well, how do you do income planning? Well, you sit down, take a look at last year and what you made. What are the changes that are coming in for this year? And then you look at how much do I want my marginal rate to be? If you're happy with 24, you go to the end of that, look back, how much money can I take out of my taxable environment? If you want it to be less than that, then you take it out of your Roth environment. We'll get a little bit more in-depth on that next week because I want to talk about the reforms that are being proposed in Congress right now from Trump that have to do with how much money they're going to force you to take out of your taxable environment funds. And they do have a chance to make it lots better. I hope they don't blow it. I fear they might. But listen next week and we'll tell you. In the past 2 years, 2 years ago last night, the Dow closed at 18,199.33. It's up 35.65%. Not a bad 2 years where I come from. So stay tuned. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. This is the Vanley Financial Hour.